Welcome, everyone. My name is Damara West, and I'm the founder of Be Well, Beautiful Woman. And I am so glad that you have joined us for the Women Who Write to Liberate Summit. It's comprised of female writers and those that support the craft of writing to inspire women just like you to find their authentic voice and use it in ways they feel inspired to, including but not limited to writing a book. And today I have the pleasure of introducing the amazing Marita Golden. She is the author of 20 works of fiction and nonfiction. Her books include the novels, The Wide Circumference of Love, After and the Edge of Heaven, and the memoirs, Migrations of the Heart, Saving Our Sons, and Don't Play in the Sun, One Woman's Journey Through the Color Complex. And the anthologies, which she edited, Us Against Alzheimer's Stories of Family Love and Faith, and Gumbo, a Celebration of African-American Writing, which she edited with the novelist E. Lynn Harris. Her most recent work of nonfiction is The Strong Black Woman, How a Myth Endangers the Physical and Mental Health of Black Women. She is the recipient of many awards, including the Writers for Writers Award presented by Barnes & Nobles, and Poets and Writers, an award from the Authors Guild, and the Fiction Award for her novel, After, awarded by the Black Caucus of the American Library Association. She has lectured and read from her work internationally and so much more. Lastly, she's the co-founder and president emerita of the Zora Neale Hurston Richard Wright Foundation. And she's the veteran teacher of writing, teaching at entities like the University of Lagos in Nigeria, and has served as a member of the faculties of the MFA Graduate Creative Writing Programs at George Mason University and Virginia Commonwealth University. There is so much more that I could say about this amazing woman who I had the pleasure of coming across years ago when I read her book, Don't Play in the Sun, One Woman's Journey Through the Color Complex. I was studying microaggressions and colorism, and it's a body of work that I continue to come back to time and time and time and time again. Marita, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, my pleasure. So it's so amazing that you have dedicated your life to literature and to writing amazing bodies of work, 20 to be exact. And so let's just start with, what inspires you to keep writing?
I'm interested in a couple of things. One, I think I was just born a storyteller. I love to tell stories. I find telling stories, whether they're fiction or nonfiction, is something that really nourishes me spiritually, intellectually, and creatively. I'm currently working on a new novel, and people often ask, what is my favorite genre? Because I write both fiction and nonfiction. And I always say that fiction is probably my favorite because it's so mysterious. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know where you're going as you try to create through words a language that brings people and situations alive. So I've just always been a storyteller, and I'm still addicted to it.
Yeah, I love it. And I love the multifaceted way in which you have utilized storytelling. Of course, you know, writing books of works, you know, nonfiction and fiction, which is so rare, right? I mean, I imagine that you don't come across many authors that write in both genres. And so I just wanted to highlight that. And then, you know, also just this eclectic way in which you've used your skill sets in order to reach the masses. And so how did you stumble upon all of these ways in which that you've been fortunate and that we've been fortunate to be able to receive your written word?
Well, my first book was a memoir. And actually, I was working on a novel. And the woman who ultimately became my agent 2 or 3 years later asked me why I wasn't writing a memoir instead of a novel, because at that time I was living in Nigeria with my first husband and was living in a environment that in some ways was very nurturing, but that was full of conflicts and tensions around culture and the expectations of women, and even in my marriage. And she basically said, you have a great story there. You're a African-American, young African-American woman married into a Nigerian family. And I could not really see at that point the power of that story. So I wrote the novel, kept writing the novel. And then as my marriage fell apart, I began to see how dramatic the story she was talking about really was. And with the subsequent memoirs that I've written, Saving Our Sons, Don't Play in the Sun, even The Strong Black Woman, those are kind of communal memoirs where I take a particular topic, colorism, or raising a Black child against the backdrop of the violence of the 90s, or the Strong Black Woman complex, and begin writing about my relationship to that theme. But then because I really feel I'm writing it with a sense of mission to and for Black people, very often I will want to weave in the voices and the experiences of other Black people. So I'll include interviews and scholarly work and journalism and essays that give the work a kind of almost the feeling of a quilt. So that's a format that I've used in a couple of my books. And then I'll go back to writing a novel. So I go back and forth. They satisfy me in different ways at different times and different points in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and something that you said that is so important is what you highlighted about the fact that you were being called to write this story, but you didn't even know how compelling the story was until you knew. And what I love about that is that so oftentimes I feel like we're being called to do something, and Source, Universe, God uses a lot of ways to speak to us, but sometimes it's not until we find ourselves in immense hardship that we discover, oh, there's a story here. And so talk to us about the importance of listening to those moments when Source, Universe, God is speaking to us to share a story.
Well, I think listening is very important. And I think that very often when I'm working with writers on their stories, whether they're fiction or nonfiction, I often tell them that they may have a concept when they start writing of what the story is, but they are both using their imagination, but they're also a channel, because a story has its own independent life. And you have to listen to the ways in which it comes through you. And you have to listen so that you can go in the direction that the story needs to go into and wants to go into. I mean, I've spent sometimes years arguing with a story, trying to impose my definition of what the story was, until the story literally took over. I couldn't fight anymore. And the story always knew the best place to go. The story always knew where it should go. So I think that, and we have to do that in life too. I think that we have to live lives that allow us the space and the time to listen to our needs as much as we listen to other people.
Yeah. You know, there's a couple of things that got spurred in me from what you shared. And I so appreciate you said that, like, in life, like, life is really unfolding and speaking to us as we matriculate through life. And the fact that you said, guys, you know, some of the stories that you've written, it was years in the making before the story really unfolded in the way in which it was supposed to unfold versus how you were forcing it to unfold, right? And so I love the simplicity of this, and what you're inviting us to do is to be still, right? And that through stillness, the answers will come. It will reveal itself over time. And then also to be detached to the outcome, right? Because, you know, only Source, Universe, God really knows the magic of the story and what the story could be.
Yes.
Of course, which is an extraction in part of you. But if we get too stuck on what it's supposed to look like, we may miss, right, some of the really important aspects that are fundamental to what it is that we're supposed to be communicating or seeing to begin with.
That's true. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So that years in the making, and you know, so oftentimes people, I think, have a lot of misconceptions about writing and what it actually takes to write. And, you know, knowing that, you know, at least one of you, the stories that you gifted us with was, you know, some time in the making. What kind of practical things should people keep in mind about the process of writing, the reality of what it actually takes to write a book?
Well, it takes, I mean, there's different ways of writing a book. You can just sort of go home over the weekend and write something and call that a book.
Yeah.
Or you can start the process with a very high expectation for yourself and for the story. And when I'm writing, I'm always writing from the sense of I want to do something that hasn't been done. I want to test myself, and I want to be willing to go into the deepest and scariest parts of the story. Good writing takes time. My writing Bible is actually a book called The Art of Slow Writing by Louise DeSalvo. And it's a book in which she's done enormous research, talking to writers, studying how writers write, and she's a writer herself. And her basic thesis is that writing is slow, and it's supposed to be slow. And we grow into the ability to tell the story day by day, sentence by sentence. And a lot of times as writers, we want to hurry. I know I've done that myself, but set a deadline and want to get this over with. But the real joy of writing is in figuring it out, in the struggle. And it really is an intellectual, sometimes a creative struggle. I mean, writing is hard work physically. It requires focus, it requires dedication, but at the same time, it requires breathing room.
Yes.
The time that you're not writing is just as important for your writing as the time that you are writing. Mm. So, you know, it's a journey. That's really, really what it is, a journey. And I'm at a point now in my writing where this new book that I'm working on, I've written enough to know that it's going to take me time as I grow into knowing who these people are. Mm-hmm. And I feel so happy when, like today, I wrote a really strong, scary 2 pages. But it had taken me a while to get to the ability to put that character in that place. Mm. For a while, I didn't know if I could put her in that place. But by showing up regularly to the page, by not abandoning her, she told me who she was. And I realized I could put her in that place.
Wow. So there's so much in here, even just about life. And, you know, when you were talking about storytelling and being born, right? Like, you've always been a storyteller. This is just who you are. It's the fabric. And I admire, like, you're a seasoned writer. I mean, you've written 20 books, and yet the process is still the process.
Definitely.
Revelation is still the revelation. The expansion is still the expansion. And there's something that is really striking to me about how transformative it sounds like writing has been for you, in which I imagine that that's the case for many writers. And so talk to us about how exactly writing has transformed you.
Well, I know that my memoir writing has been very important for me because I lost my mother when I was 21 and my father when I was 23. And I've written about them in a number of different ways, in a number of different books that I've written. And by writing about them, I've been able to extend my relationship with them. Mm. By writing about them, I came to understand them even more, to know them even more, and to know how much they love me even more. So writing literally kind of gave me my parents back after they had died. Writing a novel is just an activity that uses so much of you. It uses imagination. It uses empathy. Mm-hmm. And I think that probably if I was to say the one thing that writing has given me is it has enlarged my ability to empathize with other human beings. Mm-hmm. Because literature at its best, and that's what I aim to write, literature, not just books, but literature, breaks down barriers. Yeah. And when you're reading the story of someone who grew up in China or in Nigeria, you will see yourself in that person. Mm. And so that's why literature is so important. And that's why the banning, the current banning of so many books, keeping books that ask tough questions, that introduce people to the other, to the stranger, taking those books out of the hands of young people is so dangerous.
Yeah.
Because what literature does, and literature is scary, literature is dangerous, but love is dangerous. Mm. Love is scary. And literature prepares us to live in the world, and literature prepares young people to live in the world. That's why what's happening now is so dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, such a powerful thing to invite us to ponder upon, right? Because as you said, books really breathe life into the lives of people. Mm-hmm. And for many of us, it's the way that we see the possibility of a world that's so far beyond the world in which we know in matter form. And, you know, taking away the scary, the unknown is literally taking away our ability to think critically and all the things that you talked about, right? This capacity to hold space, to be empathetic, to see ourselves in the lives of other people that we've never even met, right? And yet so much of who they are is us too.
Yes.
But without literature, how do we get that, right? Mm-hmm. And so just that you just drop the mic on the power of books. But something that you said also, like you aim to write literature, not to write books. Break down for us what the distinct difference is in your mind as a
writer. Yeah, I think that when we think, I mean, for instance, it's very interesting that when we look at the books that say in a traditional college setting, students are required to read.
Yeah.
They're books that affirm life. Hitler's Mein Kampf is not required reading, you know, books that spout hate, books that, you know, urge you to go and kill your neighbor. Mm. Those are not the books that civilizations all over the world have said, these are our great books. These are the books that we want to pass down to the next generation. And so as a Black woman writer, I'm in conversation with so many of the Black women writers and Black writers who came before me.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to extend the work that they did. Mm. So that, for example, my first book, Migrations of the Heart, was important. When that book was published, it became a book that was used widely in colleges and universities. It wasn't just a book about, well, this young woman goes to Nigeria, marries a Nigerian, the marriage doesn't work, she comes back. It was about coming of age and growing up at a particular time, the 60s, finding my identity. The universal themes written about in a different way. And so I'm trying to write one meaningful, beautiful sentence and then another one and just create stories that really do speak on multiple levels. So there's the story itself, and then there's the meaning of that. So, and I always tell the people that I'm working with on their writing to have grand ambition, to want to do great things, to imagine their books changing something in the world. And that will give them the fortitude to keep going in what is a very, very arduous but satisfying task.
Yeah. I love grand ambition. I just love the way that that sounds. And it makes me think about an abundance principle, which is, you know, about if we can see it, then it can become a reality, right? And there's so much more to abundance than that. And this leads me to my next question, which is, you have, you know, from my vantage point, built an abundant life as a writer, right? You've written 20 books. You use your skill sets to help aspiring writers, current writers. And so talk to us about how writing has created abundance for your life.
Well, as I said, it's created abundance in that it's made me more empathetic. Also, because I've been a literary activist, and actually next year is the 40th anniversary of the publication of my first book, Migration of the Heart.
Wow.
So it's the 40th anniversary also of me, 40 years of writing, but 40 years of teaching writing, and many years of helping to create a literary institution in the Hurston Wright Foundation that would support Black writers. So it's really one of those things that I can't calculate how much just write, you know, the simple act of writing, which people think is very easy, was very hard, how much it has given my life. I mean, there's the material, you know, money and things like that. But the main thing it's given me is a very rich community of creative people who are my friends, colleagues, and people who I mentor. And so writing has enriched my life in absolutely incalculable ways. And for all of that, for all of the things like starting the Hurston Wright Foundation and winning awards for my writing, I think I'm happiest sitting at the computer knowing that I wrote a good 250 words. That fills me with as much joy as anything else.
And you're just speaking to like the power of purpose. And, you know, your purpose has, as you said, when we started this interview, was to be a storyteller and to do that in a myriad of ways. Mm-hmm. And you found your community and you've been honored and you've been able to use your craft in ways that have just touched, you know, I'm sure countless lives. And so I love how you describe that, you know, for you, it's just not this monetary, it's everything. It's almost like in many ways, the air that you breathe, right? And to think that, to have that not be present, I'm sure you couldn't even fathom that. Right.
Well, you know, writers who've been imprisoned have written on toilet paper and smuggled the toilet paper out of the prison. They've found ways to write under the most excruciating, horrible situations. Yeah. They remained writers, imprisoned, but they remained writers because that was like is that was the air they breathed.
Yes, yes, I love that. And nothing could interfere with that. So, you know, you talked about this a couple times and the challenge of writing, right? And it's certainly not not easy to do. And yet you've done it and you've given us the joy of it for 40 years. And so in what ways have you taken care of yourself in order to continue to show up and write those 250 powerful words like you did just recently?
Well, as I said earlier, my mother died when I was 21 of a stroke, and my father died when I was 23 of a heart attack. Mm. And so they were in their 60s. And I was deeply, deeply impacted by their deaths, their what I consider their early deaths, and made a commitment very early in my life to mental and physical and spiritual health so that I began a practice of transcendental meditation. I started being very, very conscious about my diet. I began doing yoga and exercising. And I would make sure that I had checkups regularly. And I would go into therapy if I thought I needed it. Mm-hmm. And so, and as I have written more and gotten more deeply into my writing career, my spiritual practice has been very, very important. I practice periods of silence. I may go away to a retreat center, or I may just wake up and tell my husband, today's a me day.
Yes.
And that's very important because as a writer, see, at different once you okay, you want to write a book, so you write a book. Mm-hmm. And then there are all these demons that are waiting for you. The green-eyed monster of jealousy, the green-eyed monster of, oh, she got a bigger advance than me. They sold, you know, all these things that deal with the commercial end of the book. And in this society, the capitalist society, it's very, very easy to get ensnared in that. Mm-hmm. And so I found that as I've written more and more, my spiritual practice has been very important in keeping me grounded and keeping me balanced about the things that are most important.
Yes, yes. Yeah, you know, and I'm sure you've heard this, whatever it is that we focus on is what expands. And so, you know, by doing your spiritual practices, as you said, it allows you to focus on the things that are most essential for what it is that you're working to birth in this world. So
as it's a constant process. I mean, you're always learning.
Yeah.
I mean, it's never like you arrive, you know, I've got this. You're expanding and growing and learning new dimensions of how to try to be a balanced, spiritually healthy person.
Yes, yes. Well, and I'm sure that you appreciate and the listeners will too, that, you know, when we don't practice, we have a default. And so through practice, it keeps things moving, flowing, the grounding, the roots stay intact. But the minute that we remove ourselves from the practice is the minute that we begin to be thrown off balance. And so, you know, I love that from a general standpoint, but particularly from someone like you that has done just amazing work over the course of your career. So as we get ready to wrap up, I would love to hear just a little bit about the new book that you're working on and why Black women need to read it.
Well, I'm not going to tell you about the new book I'm working
on. That's fair.
Because it's too new. There's a lot I don't know.
Sure.
It takes a while. But I will talk about my most recent book, The Strong Black Woman.
Great.
Which I wrote to kind of be part of this growing conversation about dismantling the idea that as women, as Black women, we have to do everything, we have to be everything, and that we can't take time out for ourselves. We can't take time to rest because what we're finding is that Black women are really in a national health emergency. Our health is really, really endangered. And even as we factor in things like racism, systemic racism, medical institutions that don't respond to us, there's more that we can do. Yeah. And the most frightening thing is that you find that Black women of all classes, from working class, from poor to upper class, fail to really make a strong commitment to their health. Mm-hmm. Too many Black women believe that peace of mind is something for white women. Yeah. So we need these practices of taking time out, going for a walk. And being healthy doesn't always mean you're some skinny chick in a Lululemon outfit. You can be healthy going into the bathroom, locking the door and telling people, don't bother me. We have to practice this all day long. So I'm very pleased to be part of a growing conversation about all of this that is designed to save Black women's lives.
Yeah, such an important book that is definitely in alignment with the mission of Be Well, Beautiful Woman. And I'm excited to read it myself. It's one of the books that I have not read that you've written, and I'm definitely going to go out and get it. And my hope is that the listeners will also want to dive into that book so that we can amplify our own self-care. So, Marita, we've come to the end of our interview, and I would just love for you to share just final words of inspiration before we invite people to get connected to you in all the ways that they can.
Well, I think that right now, I want your listeners to learn how to practice joy.
Yes.
And I want them to learn how to practice self-care, mm-hmm. whether they're writing a book or not writing a book or whatever. Black women, women everywhere have a right to joy.
Yes.
We have a right to rest, and we have a right to peace.
I love that. Oh, such powerful words to end us with. And now, Marita, talk to us about how the audience can stay in touch with you.
Well, they can visit my website, maritagolden.com, and there they'll find information about my workshops. I'm on Facebook, Marita Golden Author. I'm on Twitter and a little bit on Instagram.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Wonderful. So again, I just have immense gratitude. I have been touched in profound ways during the short time that we've spent. And so thank you for your work. Thank you for your spirit. Thank you for
continuing. Well, thank you also for all the work you're doing.
Yeah.
I know it's not easy doing the work you do, but thank you for being dedicated to do it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much. So listeners, you heard it here. Make sure that you follow Marita Golden all the ways that she has invited us to. Check out her bodies of work. They have certainly impacted my life, and I know for certain they're going to impact your life as well. And you heard it here at the Women Who Write to Liberate Summit, which is comprised of amazing writers just like Marita Golden, who are helping you to amplify your voice so that if you're called to write a book or to use your storytelling in any way, this is the platform to help to catapult you to do that. Until next time, beauties, Ashe.